Well, hello and welcome.
Welcome
to another edition
of
CST.
Considering.
I got you.
That was totally. I thought we were totally in sync there, buddy. That was just harsh.
Well, it can't be the same every time.
I hate you. I quit.
I'll make sure your last check gets sent, and
I'm taking Gary with me. Come on, Gary.
All right, let's go.
I'm Mark Storer, and that man over there is...
I am Keith Cox. Hi, everybody. How y'all doing?
And this is Considering Some Things.
It is. So let's tell them who sponsors this amazing podcast, Mark.
Well, our first sponsor, the first sponsor we ever had for the show was Nabu Wines, N-A-B-U, N-A-B-U, wines.com. Greg Barnett, Jeff Bailey making some great varietals and some great blends at Nabu Wines in Westlake Village, California. I know you're thinking to yourself, self, they don't grow a lot of grapes in Westlake Village, California. And that's true. They don't. These guys are getting grapes from Napa and they're getting grapes from Malibu. Thus the name Nabu. They're making some wonderful wines. You ought to check them out. They have wonderful outdoor seating that's socially distanced. They have a wonderful delivery program free in LA County, Ventura County, and even parts of Orange County. It's a lot of fun to go up there on a weekend and try out what the LA Daily News called the best wine bar in the county. And it's actually not really in the county, but it's just over the border, so they assumed that it was part of it.
Well, forget that. That just blew everything.
Well, it's kind of like LA County falling apart right now with its weird restriction. Good Lord have mercy. Anyway, Nabu Wines at NabuWines.com. Greg Barnett, Jeff Bailey, tell them I said hi and tell them that you listened to Considering Some Things.
All right.
Who else are we sponsored by, Keith Cox?
If you are a musician and you live on the Central Coast or anywhere in the 805, you please should be considering joining up on the Facebook group 805 Musician Network. The 805 Musician Network was formed for one sole purpose, and that was musicians helping musicians. If you are sick and you have to, you don't have a gig, you hit the Musician Network and you find a musician. So it's twofold. It's making sure that you don't disappoint a venue because you can't play, and you're helping another musician. And it's always a quid pro quo thing. We help each other out. But then this thing grew into a whole lot more. So it's musicians looking for other musicians to play, even bass players. They're looking for, they are, it's weird. They're totally looking for sometimes other projects. So 805 Musician Network, if you live in the 805, you should join it. And it's musicians helping musicians.
I love that. Every time you say it, I want to say it's musicians helping musicians pull musicians out of musicians. Because it's like the American Gynecological Society. Remember that? People helping people pull people out of people.
That's a good one. All right.
Watch. I'm going to catch flack for that.
Now. You are somehow.
Yeah.
Oops.
You can't have fun no more.
No, we can't. But we can right now, actually. I'm very excited.
Why are you very excited?
Well, because I just realized you were going to announce him. And I was about to, steal your thunder. And I'm like, wait, Keith. That's right. Mark wanted to do it. Never mind.
You blew the whole thing.
I don't know why. He doesn't even like you, Mark. But let's go ahead anyway.
I've known Gary Burke since about 2008. I interviewed him for an article I did in Wine Country This Week, which is a magazine that no longer exists. It's now called Wine Country This Month because I guess they couldn't afford to keep it up. But Gary and I got to know each other at Costa de Oro Winery. He is the owner of the winemaker, and I'm very thrilled to have him here and as part of our show this evening.
All
cool.
Right.
Thank you very much.
Gary, thanks for coming on. I'm privileged to know Gary, of course, because he lets me play at his fine establishment every now and then. And it's a wonderful, wonderful place. You meet the nicest people. Of course, Gary and his crew, fantastic people. Just really a great bunch. So tell us, Gary.
And they've stopped watering down their wines entirely. So you can just forget that. That doesn't happen.
Not anymore. A lot has changed since 2008.
Yeah. You're not allowed to use vodka anymore as part of your wine making.
Well, we use it, just not in the winemaking process.
Okay. Very good. That's Costa de Oro is great because it's gold. That's Gold Coast, right? Am I right about that?
That is correct. Yeah.
Yeah, and there you are on the Gold Coast, on right near Santa, right in Santa Maria.
That's right. Yeah. Well, actually, you know, my family are farmers in the area. And so we have Gold Coast Farms and Gold Coast Packing. And, you know, if you look around, there's a lot of things named Gold Coast. So when we went to name the winery, I just wanted to do something a little bit different. And so a little nod to the Spanish heritage and, you know, the folks that work in the vineyard and all that, we named it Costa de Oro.
It's a lot sexier.
There you go.
It's just a lot sexier. Where did you get that wine from? Costa de Oro.
Yeah.
Not Gold Coast, but Costa de Oro. It's very good.
No, you nailed that. Absolutely.
And my friend Keith, who has very little taste, doesn't love Pinot Noir. Love Pinot Noir. I know. He'll drink it, but that's because he'll drink anything.
I know what my favorite is now.
Yeah, so Mark knew that would get you. Like, he likes Keith now, but wait, what I tell him this? Boom. Gary, that's all he like features, and I'm like, I don't know, Gary. That
you walk into the winery, that's all it is.
pretty close. Now, with that said, there's a reason, and that's because we live in an area that's just like primarily Pinot Noir. I mean, that's it, all there really is. And after a while, you know, and I like bold, you know, and I do like Pinots. So
Keith, you don't. It's cool, man. It's all good.
Thanks, man.
You know, I mean, the deal is the Santa Maria Valley is a cool climate, you know, cool climate varietals that are going to shine there are going to be Pinot Noir, Chardonnay, right. And you know,
that's
so
true.
It just makes sense. You need the heat. Like, you got to go over the hill to Paso Robles to get the heat to ripen Cabernet, or go down into the San Ynez Valley, a little more inland. They can ripen Cabernet and that kind of thing. So it's just a function of where we are.
Ups, and I absolutely know that. And again, I like Pinots. It's just they're not my favorite, but I like them. They're great, and they're all over the place. And I'm proud because we certainly, when we talk about Santa Maria Hills and everything like that, we just, you know, Pinots are extremely popular. So a lot of people love them. And I'm like, they're fantastic.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I think there's basically a fork in the road, and the fork is Pinot Noir and Cabernet, and all wines are somewhere on those two roads, you know? So
interesting.
You know, Cabernet tends to be more angular. Pinot Noir tends to be more sort of soft, round, and plush, but, you know, more acid-driven at the same time, and there's the balance there. But, you know, different strokes for different folks, and obviously, depending on what the mood, the situation, and the food on the table is, there's room for all of them.
I agree.
Gary, you talked about right at the beginning here when we dragged you in and made you, you know, the third member of the show. You talked about farming. Is this where you started your love of wine? Did you kind of start in the vineyard and in the field?
Well, so when I grew up, my family, and today my family farms broccoli, cauliflower, spinach, cilantro. We used to do strawberries, and we do some greens and lettuces, but the big four are the broccoli, cauliflower, cilantro, and spinach. And, but I always joke that, you know, I didn't see a life in broccoli. And, but, you know, it's funny how the world works. After I graduated college and I moved down to Los Angeles, my father and his business partner, they planted our vineyard. And, that really piqued my interest. And, you know, my father could see that, and he kind of lured me back into through the wine, and I started meeting winemakers in the area. I started selling our grapes, and I was doing all this from Los Angeles. And slowly but surely, after meeting people like Jim Clendenin out at ABC, Bob Lindquist at Coupe, and the Fox and Boys, and Lane Tanner, and Hitchy Post, Gray and Frank, and all that, you know, it just sort of I got struck by the bug and decided that I wanted to to make wine. And so, I mean, fast forward to today, I'm very involved in my family's farming business. And so it's funny how, you know, everything comes full circle, but, you know, it's good. And it's good to have that kind of diversity between wine and the vegetables.
And so such an interesting turn, because you got your degree, a business degree, Cal Poly, am I correct?
Correct.
But you were obsessed with music. How did that happen?
Well, I just grew up loving music. You know, I can remember Saturday mornings getting up or Sunday mornings before others in the house, and just, you know, putting on the AM radio dial and listening to, you know, anything from top 40 to, you know, Motown hits and stuff like that. And just loving music as a young kid. And my father was a big lover of music too. So he turned me on to everything from, you know, Elvis and Jerry Lee Lewis, Johnny Cash, all that kind of stuff. And I had an older sister who was listening to, you know, I mean, anything like Aerosmith or Peter Frampton or something like that. But, you know, I quickly found Led Zeppelin and Jimi Hendrix, you know?
Right.
So, so yeah, I grew up loving music. And, in fact, my first job out of college, I did royalty accounting at Capitol Records.
Oh, wow.
But I discovered I was on the wrong side of the desk very quickly.
Yep.
Yeah. So you have found a life in broccoli, is what you're saying.
Well, it pays for a lot of stuff, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So, yeah. No,
you
I
know,
mean,
a good broccoli and cheese sauce. I don't know. I'm not thinking you can beat that.
Well, I think there might be better things out there, but it's all good. I mean, we've been able to build a business out of that. And, you know, today the farming operation, we not only farm, but we have a processing plant where we, you know, pack, we clean and trim, broccoli florets, cauliflower florets,
nice,
cilantro, spinach, all those kinds of things. And so they're packaged and sold to Costco, Trader Joe's,
excellent,
or, you know, food service like Taco Bell and US Foods and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Wait, Taco Bell uses real food?
Taco Bell, actually, it's interesting. We have been the sole supplier of cilantro to Taco Bell for 20 years.
And they
actually, 2 weeks ago, discontinued cilantro on the menu. The only thing it was in was their pico de gallo sauce, which they were hand cutting and making in batches in the back of the kitchen. And they nixed that because they wanted to get away from, you know, actually having
food.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
They found a synthetic version.
Yeah. We found some soap suds that taste remarkably similar.
Exactly.
So you probably don't even know this, Gary, but I owned an industrial supply business for quite a long time. And I actually did business with your company.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Doing safety equipment and gas detection, things of that nature. So
was that back on Boone Street?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's only telling you now because we're being public. And if you find it,
do we still owe you money?
No. And you know what? I sold the business now. So if you do, you did. No, you guys were good with pay and everything like that.
Not your problem anymore.
Yeah. It was nice helping you guys. I mean, I loved the industrial safety business because it was always really, I'm helping people. I'm solving problems. And, you know, so cool. I solved some of your problems. It was a wonderful thing. So I didn't realize it was you. I don't know why.
Well, I probably, depending on how long ago it was, I might not have been as involved as I am today, because for a long time, when I say a long time, I mean from 94 to 2002, I worked for Au Bon Climat Coupe and made my wines out there.
Yeah.
And then in 2002, I left to devote all, you know, full time to Costa de Oro. And then as time has gone on, I've just gotten more involved in other aspects of the business.
Oh, yeah.
And I know that you've been busy as anything with the winery itself. So, I mean, where does all the time in the day come from, Gare? How are you working this together?
There's a lot of balls in the air.
Man, oh, man.
That's all I can say. No, we're very busy. Obviously, we have a lot of great people that work for us, and they carry a lot of the load. So, you can't do anything without good people around you. And that's, my father always told me that the best thing you can do is hire people that are smarter than you and know what they're doing. And, you know, I mean, that's the more you can spread out the responsibility, the better off you are, you know?
Oh, that's business 101 right there.
Yeah.
I absolutely believe.
If so, you know, I mean, a lot of it is about being a good manager.
Right. You know? Yeah. And knowing how to delegate and having really good people.
Right.
Yeah. Right. I definitely good at just, that's how you do well. So.
And you do that at Costa de Oro. You do that. I know the way you treat your people there. I know the way you treat Keith there. I think you should treat him differently, but that's, you know, that's between you and him.
Yeah, I'm still technically like the ugly stepchild that he hires out of pity. More than anything else. Like, all right, Keith has been bugging me. I'll give you some gigs. All right,
no, we have people like that, Keith. You're not one of them.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm not going to get into who I think are your ugly.
It's probably best.
Yeah, it's best not. But now, because you and I don't know if you remember this or not, but and I think this goes back to when I first started the 805 Musician Network. But Bill Hunter and I, we did this songwriters thing.
I remember that. Yeah,
and that's I think where I really first met you.
Yeah,
and your wife went down there, and we're all writing songs. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah. No, Russ Douglas was there, and Bill obviously. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No, I remember that.
Yeah, that was cool. So now you, going back to, so you really went to LA because, again, your goal was to be a musician.
That's correct. Yeah.
Okay. And I think, if I'm not correct, you and your wife recorded some stuff or?
Yeah. So, you know, originally everything that I was doing was, you know, in the, I would say, rock and kind of folk rock pop world or whatever. And then, I mean, so that's like one era of time. Then fast forward to the early 90s, we moved back up here and I got into the wine business. Like I say, it was around 93, right. 94. And at that time, then we started having kids. And I have two boys that are now 25 and 22. And my wife started teaching dance and music in schools and in some daycares. And through that, she came to me and said, I want to write children's music. And, you know, the only thing I knew at that time was Barney, you know, and I'm going, I'm out, you know,
I'm
not interested,
but I'm playing that in the background. I'm so adding that to this tape,
but she was adamant about it. And she said, John Lennon wrote children's music. Mozart wrote children's music. You know, don't put yourself on too big of a pedestal here. And she said, you just write great music and I'll put a positive message to children in the lyrics and we'll do this. And so actually we've done three CDs of children's music and releasing more. We just released a new song a few weeks ago and have another one coming out later this month. So
wait, you're still recording music? You're in the family business. You're farming four different products. You're making wine.
Well, I'm not doing all those things, right? I'm not driving the tractor.
Right.
I mean, music still is my first love. I mean, I love so many of the other things that I do, but I'll never stop writing and recording. And I still write and record, more contemporary music too, or more, you know, adult oriented music today. So,
Is that like adult film?
Yeah, I know. When you say adult, be careful. No. We're still very active in it and, have a little studio in the house and I'll go through periods where maybe I'm not as busy with it as other times, but I definitely am active in it.
And you release the, so you've got three releases, am I correct?
Yeah, that's right. We have three different, and the name of the children's project is Birdie. And, Yeah. Birdie. Yeah. And so we've got, three different releases, you know, full albums. And now, in today's world, because, you know, we've got everything on Spotify and Pandora and all those streaming services And so in today's world, the album concept is somewhat dead. And so now we're just releasing individual songs. So, I mean, during COVID, we kind of developed the new plan or whatever of we're just going to try to release a song roughly every month. And if we put it out later as an album, great. But it's not really the way people are consuming music, right? They're consuming it more individually through streams. But actually, it's been pretty cool because like Birdie has been able to get on different Spotify playlists and stuff. And, you know, some of the tunes have 500,000 streams. And, you know,
is it B-I-R-D-Y or D-I-E?
B-I-R-D-I-E.
So like the film, like the old movie with Peter Gabriel's music. Yeah,
Cool. Yeah. No, so it's been fun.
Is it the Birdie song on YouTube?
There absolutely is. Yeah.
Yeah, I just saw. I'm just checking it out. There's
And you know the name Birdie is a somewhat common name, and so if you see one, you can ask me. But there are some other, like, if you just Google Birdie, all kinds of stuff is going to pop up. It's not necessarily us.
Yeah.
If it's like super explicit rap, it's probably not us.
No, I was Googling Birdie children's music.
There you go, boom.
And I found like Baby Birdie, Birdie Dance.
Anyone requiring lessons on how to do proper internet searches can contact considering somethings.com.
Yeah, you know what? You know what? Google Birdie Tunes, because the YouTube page is Birdie Tunes.
Birdie Tunes, all right.
Yeah.
All right.
There you go.
Well, can we talk about Pinot Noir for a minute?
Hell yeah.
All right.
Keith, are
you drinking Pinot Noir in honor of this moment? Because I am.
No, I'm having an Elijah Craig.
Funny is you were having Elijah Craig when I think the Sean Wiggins podcast I listened to. I was thinking about having a little rye when I came on, but unfortunately I went with Pinot Noir, or fortunately, in the case maybe.
Well, and I dig Pinot. Don't get me wrong. I dig Pinot. I got to mix it up. I still have yesterday. I drank do you remember McKee and Phillips?
Sure.
Okay. Yeah. So, you know, they went out a while, but I had a case of their 2009 private reserve. And, you know, I'm popping that. And I just popped that yesterday. And I'm like, oh, that's good.
Have you got a lot of old wines, Keith? You tend to have. I mean, the last time you've been drinking, you've had a couple of 2009s. I think there was a 2008 in there.
2008 Shoestring. Yeah. That was a Syrah. Really.
Do you keep
good.
A lot of those around?
Yeah, a little bit. A little bit. You know, I got a couple. I've got, you know, some Star Lane. I got some good stuff there.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Gary, so do you farm the grapes that you make into wine? Do you do that as well?
We do. We have a 30-acre vineyard of 20 acres of Pinot Noir and 10 acres of Chardonnay. And then we do purchase grapes on the outside as well. So we, you know, we buy everything from Pinot Grigio and Sauv Blanc to Tempranillo and Cabernet and things like that.
Tempranillo is one of my faves.
There you go.
I'm such a fan of Pinot Noir, and I've had your Pinot Noir. My wife and I both have, and we like it. And can you talk about, because this is, you know, Sam Neill, the actor, and Peter Lenkuki talked about him, Keith, in our interview with Final Girl.
Yeah.
And, you know, he grows Pinot Noir in New Zealand, he talks about it. I know a little bit about it, but I've never farmed it, of course. It is a very delicate grape, is it not?
That's correct. What it is it's the thinnest skinned grape, the red grape. So it has less pigmentation. That's why it's lighter in color. And because it's thin skinned, then it's very susceptible to all kinds of issues in the vineyard. And you know, not that it's easier to make, you know, Cabernet, because I would never say that. It's just there's lots of problems you can run into with Pinot Noir because it is so delicate. Yeah. What I have found is, you know, you don't want to be too heavy handed with it because you can kind of ruin the essence of the grape, or, you know, the soul of the grape, so to speak, if you try to extract too much out of it. So what I find is we try to make a less winemaker driven wine and more of a terroir driven wine, meaning, you know, we try to just do what the grapes want to do, and we don't try to over extract it. We don't try to manipulate it too much. We're very hands off, really, more than anything. And what it's going to express in a particular vintage, it's okay with me to let it express that. I'm not trying to make Kool-Aid or McDonald's that tastes the same every time. I'm trying to make something that is, you know, truly a moment in time, and you're capturing that moment.
You did learn from Jim Clendenin, didn't you?
I did. I mean, he's an amazing man. The guys out there, Jim, Bob, Jim Adelman, the general manager, amazing people, amazing wine people, and truly collectors and connoisseurs as well as winemakers. So I learned a lot.
Is Lane Tanner still around, or is she not?
Yeah.
She is.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, she's part of the Ludum project. And she quote unquote retired for about a year. And then she was back at it. So I haven't seen her lately, but I typically see her at certain tastings. And, you know, it's great to run into people. But obviously, you know, in the last 9 months, we haven't been doing a lot of tastings.
Lord help us. We just need to fix this thing.
Yeah. No kidding.
Man.
Let me know when you get that done.
Yeah, I'm working on it right now. We've got meetings happening at the White House very soon.
Good.
Yeah. Now, again, not that I despise Pinots, because I really do like them. Don't get me wrong. Just
keep talking, Keith.
But now, especially Costa d'Oro Pinots. I'm being obsequious here a little bit, but I do believe your wines are fantastic. And it's not just me talking. I believe you.
I agree. Yeah.
No, you've won some awards. Am I correct?
Sure. Yep. Yeah. Lots, yeah. Yeah. No. I think for me, the big thing is trying to have a style, you know, trying to do something that is recognizable so that, you know, and I equate it back to music. You know, I say, you know, Mick Jagger's not the greatest singer in the world, but you know, it's him when you hear it.
Absolutely.
And there's something to be said for that. So I'm not necessarily trying to do anything other than show the expression of the Santa Maria Valley and specifically out of our vineyard, Gold Coast Vineyard, and just make a wine that is aromatically and texturally alive and pleasing, and that has something to say every time you go back to the glass. So I find that over extracted or over manipulated wines tend to be monolithic, and it's kind of like taking all the paint and throwing it on the canvas all at once. Mm. And it's just kind of smeared everywhere, and it's hard to find delineation. And I want you to be able to, you know, you're going to smell strawberry and raspberry the first time, and then maybe you come back and you smell orange blossom, and the next time you smell a little bit of, fennel seed or whatever, you know, and you can get all esoteric with all the descriptions. But the idea is that I want the wine to be alive and evolving in the glass. And I want the best glass of the bottle to be the last glass of the bottle. And to accomplish that, you cannot over manipulate the wine, because it's just like a flower that you beat up. It's just going to close, and it's just going to harden. And we want it to, when the air hits it, for it to be opening up and, you know, expressive and changing in the glass.
Oh, man.
Man, Gary, I'll tell you what. Yeah, you I love the passion that you have for your wines. There's no doubt about that. So
yeah, cool.
Now
he doesn't have that same passion for the broccoli, apparently.
No. Yeah, you just ask him to describe broccoli.
Butter,
like, I don't know.
A big slab of butter on it, and you're good to go.
There, I don't know.
Slap it in the microwave.
I don't care.
No,
whatever. Anyway, let's go back to wine already. Enough with broccoli.
Well, when you're producing the wine here, so you're grabbing from your vineyard. Do you buy Pinot Noir from other vineyards as well?
Yeah, we did not this year, only strictly due to, you know, COVID and the uncertainty. We didn't. But in the past, we have bought grapes from, you know, Solomon Hills and, you know, Santa Rita Hills. And as far as Pinot Noir specifically, we buy from other vineyards as well. But sure. But this year we kind of just, like I said, let's play it a little conservative and we'll just harvest our vineyard.
Are you guys, and Keith, you might know this too, but are you guys, as you say, you grow Chardonnay and Pinot Noir, Burgundy and wines. Are you on the same latitude as Burgundy?
No.
Or is that not quite right? No.
Yeah, no. Oregon is more, Oregon, like the Willamette Valley is more equivalent to that. So we are, you know, it was interesting. Once at World of Pinot Noir, forget who was the speaker who talked about this, but he talked about just the Santa Barbara County, how it just has more, you know, sunshine than Burgundy or Oregon. And it's not that it's hotter, although it can be. There's probably more degree days, but just the luminosity, the length of the days and all that. So I'm sure there are more degree days, but you know, all of that speaks to that our wines are going to show more ripeness. It doesn't mean that they're necessarily higher in alcohol, but they're going to be more fruit-driven, more fruit-forward than Burgundy is, you know, typically. And so,
right.
You know, absolutely. Those wines are going to have probably higher acidity, lower pH. And but with that said, we are still a Region 1, relatively cool climate, and we have wines with vibrant acidity and very food friendly and very ageable because of that.
Yep. That's my favorite thing about them.
Yeah.
You used to live in the Solomon Hills, Keith, right? That was kicking grounds for you.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not actually in, but I had the view. So yeah. I was on Orchid and off of Solomon View Road there. So you could see the Solomon Hills. It was beautiful. Really. Yeah.
You. The whole area where you guys are and Gary, Gary's tasting room is right off the 101 freeway,
sure is.
Which makes it very accessible. And if you don't stop there, it's a criminal offense.
You
should be arrested if you don't stop at Costa de Oro.
We're going to set up a checkpoint.
See, why did you stop here? Checkpoint.
It's your Pinot Noir checkpoint. Yeah. Yeah. That's what we could start doing, is start doing COVID checkpoints in which we give people Pinot Noir.
Oh, there you go. I thought you were going to say a rapid test or something.
There you go.
I couldn't care less if they had COVID. I just wanted to buy the wine.
Correct. Hey, I hung out at Costa on Saturday. It was a lot of fun. It was my first trivia night ever.
I know. Yeah. That was cool.
I love trivia nights.
It was a lot of fun. I competed pretty well, I might say.
Did you? Yeah, unfortunately, I had to leave early, but you did all right?
Yeah, we were tied. So I was tied for second. Okay. There was some group sitting there that just was way above us, and we were close.
Okay.
So yeah, the second half I did really, 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 really well.
Well, you came late, so you probably rushed through the first half.
I rushed through the first one real quick. You just get quick. Second ones, I got to relax a little bit. Okay, so I blew it. Where it was the oldest living creature? I said turtles, and it's technically tortoise.
Oh,
I'm like,
oh,
that's okay. I meant.
Yeah,
we're at the same thing. That costume, I said turtle, and no, it's tortoise. All
so
right,
so close.
And there was another one where it was like. Spaghetti Westerns, and I thought he said who directed the famous Spaghetti Westerns, and
Federico Fellini.
No, Sergio Leone.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
Right. But he said no. He starred, and I of course Clint Eastwood. I knew that too, but I put Sergio Leone. And he goes, oh, Clint Eastwood. I'm like, what? He didn't direct. He goes, I didn't say direct. I said who starred. I'm like, don't. Anyway, so yeah. Otherwise, it would have been almost perfect.
You're always a turtle guy.
That's, turtle.
Turtles versus tortoise.
Yeah, should have said tortoise.
Today I heard the new name, and again, we are not a political show, but it was just funny. No matter who you are, I don't care who you are, it's funny. The new name for Mitch McConnell in the Senate is the murder turtle.
Oh my God, now I've got that in my head.
He's a murder turtle.
A murder turtle, you're right. Ooh.
Gary, the vintages you're growing, and then we're tasting. Where are we tasting right now? Are we 2019 in the barrel still, or is it
most of the 19s are in barrel? I mean, we you know, like our rosé and some early release wines have gotten out, but for the most part, what we're pouring in the tasting room is 2018.
Yep,
we do have some reserve Pinot Noirs that are from the 2017 vintage that those are, you know, almost sold out, and then we'll move into the 18s. But yeah, primarily 2018 is what we're.
18 was a pretty good vintage year too, wasn't it?
Yeah. It's a nice solid year. They're very pleasant forward wines. In my mind, they're a little more early drinking. You know, they're not necessarily built for long term, but they're real pretty wines, real, you know, fruit driven, and they're very well received. So
when I was writing for Decanter magazine, the British magazine, and I'm telling you now, you have not been rejected until you've been rejected by a British editor. You feel good afterwards. You're like, wow, I feel totally good about myself after he called me a heel and what else does he use? A pillock. You're a pillock. Don't send your work again. No. And I learned something about, I've totally forgotten where I'm going with this.
The Pinot talking.
It is the Pinot talking. It is, we're not talking at this point. No, it's that 99% of wine purchased in America is consumed within the first 48 hours after purchase.
Yep. Yeah, sure. It's kind of depressing to me, actually.
Yeah.
You know, because you go, what are we doing all this for if everybody's going to drink it so fast? But you're absolutely right. I don't know if it's 99%, but it's a high number.
Yeah, it's really high. Yeah.
And it's 48 hours. So, you know, the truth of the matter is the premium high-end wine market is a small slice of the pie, right? Yeah, all you got to do is go to the grocery store and look at all the cute little animals on the labels, you know?
So true.
Yeah. So, you know, it is what it is. And I get it. I don't expect everyone to be as geeked about wine as maybe I am or you guys are or whatever. But you know, there is a very, you know, there's no other experience like tasting, a 25-year-old Burgundy. I mean, you just can't find those flavors. They're sort of primal flavors that either you get it or you don't, you know? And so if you've never had that experience, why would I expect you to care? So, I would love and I love to share that experience with as many people. And we store library wine and offer it to the wine club and that kind of thing. And we have a segment of the wine club that gets it and buys it with regularity. But for the most part, most people are, you know, what have you done for me lately, Lino? And I get it.
Well, you traveled. Yeah, sorry.
And I think it's hard to find because I do like aged wines. So when I stumble across a 2008 or something like 2009, something like that, I'm going to snag that up. And especially if it's just amazing when you drink it. And it's really fun to like buy like three or four bottles and we'll, you know, pop one immediately. And then we'll do our notes, and then we're going to sit on the bottle for the next bottle for like 2 years, and open it again and see if our notes match. And we just did that with, again, going back to McKean Phillips, I had a 2000 of theirs, 2000 cab. And it was amazing.
Cool.
Amazing. So, and we looked at our notes from when we first got it, which was like in, I don't know, 2010, something like that. And, you know, how much the aging, it blows your mind how much the flavors change. A lot of times for the worse. I mean, the stuff can go vinegar like that, you know.
You're absolutely right. I mean, when a wine is young, it's fruit driven, right? And then as it ages, that fruit is going to fade or at least fall towards the back, and you're going to get these, you know, secondary, tertiary flavors moving forward that are very unusual to somebody that hasn't tasted that before. And those descriptors are things like, you know, barnyard and road tar and cigar box and, you know, and people go, what? Yep. Why would I want to drink that? And you're like, well, it's kind of like, amazing, it's kind of like grandma's stew, you know, it's better on the third day than it was on the first day. You know,
bingo. You nailed it. That's exactly right.
Flavors and aromas, they meld into something that the sum is greater than the individual parts, you know? And so, you know, like I say, have you ever heard the term umami, which, yeah, it's considered like a fifth, just sense. Exactly.
Yeah.
It's not acid, it's not sweetness, it's not bitterness. It's comfort. It's hominess. And you go, what are you talking about? And you go, well, again, go back to the stew that has umami, you know?
Yeah. Full, exactly. Rich taste that totally satisfies the minute earthy. It hits. And I think that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I think
Burgundy's good. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'd always say, if your wine tastes like a graveyard, I'm gonna buy it by the case. People kind of look at me sideways when they say that, and they're like, "I think I get where you're going." I'm like, "Yeah, I want that mushroomy, earthy, complex, and a little bit of, like you said, tobacco-y, and a little leather, and some cocoa in there somewhere, a whole bunch of other things. You know, the dark berries, and sublime to me. And then it's fun because the Europeans are so much, it's really about pairing the wine. I mean, that's everything. And we don't seem to do that as much, although it's amazing, finding a wine and pairing it with the right food that you're eating. And it's like, oh, wow, that wine just changed like that from this, bright cherry thing to, now it's.
And that's a whole skill unto itself, I mean, obviously, that's what sommeliers are trained to do at the restaurant for you. But it's, just because you make wine doesn't mean you're going to understand what that wine's going to pair with, or what little nuance in the dish that you could change to make, the oranges pop out of the, wine. So it's a skill unto itself.
There's such great, but that's one of the fun things about wine. It's ever changing, and it really puts. Hey, you know what? We've stumbled onto a wine show here.
There you go.
Go figure.
Gary, have you traveled through Europe? Have you done France and all that?
Yeah, I've been to Burgundy. Yeah.
What was that like for you?
Absolutely fantastic. I mean, standing in vineyards in Burgundy, and you're just kind of like you've arrived in Mecca, and it just very cool. So yeah, I've traveled through Spain and France and Italy and been able to do a little bit of tasting and winery visits and talk with some of the winemakers over there. I mean, I'm like going back to Clendenin, and he goes to Burgundy like twice a year, for the last 40 years. But so I'm not that well traveled, but I've had the opportunity to do some of that, and it truly opens your mind to things. You always learn stuff. You always come back kind of reinvigorated and inspired to improve your game. And I think that's kind of what it's all about. You said the wine thing is it's a subject that you can never know all the answers. So if you stay open, you can always be learning, growing, and, be inspired by it,
Oh, absolutely. I liked your analogy about music and wines, and you're absolutely correct. From how subjective it is to just where they can take you, where wine can take you, where music can take you. That's why I love it. And of course, because you are a musician as well, Gary. So of course you definitely have those analogies, and you have the passion for creativity. So you create some amazing wines, you create some great music. You're living the life, man.
That's God's work right there, people.
I'm telling you what, buddy.
I mean, I think everybody's creative, and it's just how are you going to approach your life? If you could be a creative mom at home decorating your house, or you could be a creative accountant. That's what Trump's accountants are, right? They're creative.
Very creative, correct.
Well, and you know, it's funny, as an educator, one of the areas in which my education career was informed was when I became a first level certified sommelier, which again is a very low level, they don't do anymore, but I learned a lot about wine, and I think you're on the right track, and that is that everybody is creative, and I think the degree to which we discover right. our creativity, whatever that may be. I've known Keith for 40 some odd years, and you know, all that time, the happiest he has ever been is when yeah. he's creating music, when he's writing, when that's what makes Keith Keith. And I think that's true of me. I think that's yeah. true of all
no,
of us.
No, I agree. I agree completely. I mean, it just kind of flashed back yeah. to me when I said, when I was doing royalty accounting at Capitol Records, and I realized I was on the wrong side of the desk. Just, well, I mean, you know, I could have approached it probably in a more creative way, but you know, just sitting and reading contracts and crunching numbers, I'm like, ooh, I don't know. I'm much happier when I'm, you know, creating, like you said, whether it's making wine or music.
You want a crunchy guitar, exactly. not crunchy numbers, man. I get that, but I also get, again, there is passion in everything. And if you're passionate about your business, I mean, again, I had an industrial supply business for almost 30 years or whatever, and I was passionate about it. I loved doing the training. I loved yeah. helping people. So that sort of helped my
career. And it was creative yeah, right. for you. It was absolutely.
Absolutely. You know, you're doing training classes or helping people, figuring out ways to help them. There's a huge creative process there. And it's very fulfilling when you know that you've, you know, help somebody else, and you
and
know,
people like want to work with people that are passionate and excited about what they're doing. So, you know, I'm sure that attitude helped with the success of the business too.
Absolutely, and when you believe in what you're doing, it just, you don't even have yeah, to sell it. It just exudes. It yeah. comes out yeah. of you, right? So, and having that passion is just fantastic. So. And I definitely, the Costa Adoro, just when you go there, is that vibe, you know, and of course the fact that, you know, you support local live music, which of course nowadays
is a pretty tougher
thing. Yeah. it's just getting ugly and ugly. You know, I averaged roughly 10 gigs a month, and there's some musicians who double that. and now we're all down to scraping, you know,
Yeah. Yeah.
You know how it is.
No, there's so very few places very that are you know, having live music. So, I get it. But that was such an important part of the concept for us. I mean, we want people to walk in there and feel like, you know, everything's outside now, but we want you to feel like you're in our living room. You know, you're hanging out and we're just, you know, having some wine and listening to music and, you know, doing what we always like to do. So that sort of casualness of the atmosphere is what we were certainly looking for.
Well, I think you can pull that off outside, you know, because, you know, this COVID thing, people have to reinvent. You have to, you know, reinvent yourselves and, you know, adapt and overcome. And you've definitely done that because I think you're outdoors. What you've done in a very short amount of time, it's still a pretty good vibe. I mean,
it's hilarious to me. We have so many people that are like, are you guys going to keep doing this even after COVID? Like, they love the vibe of just being outside and doing it. And, you know, this was back in like September. And I would say, you're not going to like it in November when it's freezing cold. And then we get to November and everybody still shows up. And, you know, we bought all these heaters that we have out there under the tent. And
that's what exactly.
That's
for.
What people say. Well, I just put a jacket on. I'm fine. I love it out here. So, hey.
I can't tell you how many times, honestly, truthfully, I've played, you know, some October gigs and everything, or not October, but going back to December, January, when it gets really cold. And I just wear a jacket when I'm playing.
I don't
and it's
know.
No
I,
big deal.
I hate I playing wear, outside because, you know, my fingers get cold.
They do.
It's hard to move your fingers.
But you know what? When, you know, if you have this great crowd, and this is me, of course, speaking, everybody's different. You know, you forget about the fact that your fingers are frozen. You start forgetting all that because you're just in a groove and there's that passion there. You're, you know, they're rocking, you're rocking, and, you know, you all become one with, and it's just sublime. And all of a sudden you just don't care because you're having fun. You're doing what you love and people are feeling it. And, you know, and that's everything.
I read a story that at Obama's inauguration, Yo-Yo Ma was there and played, but it was so cold they had to basically Milli Vanilli the thing because he could, because it was like, you know, very, very cold and he could not play. So I'm thinking if it's that cold, you know, luckily we're in California.
And that's a good point. I'm saying this when maybe right,
exactly.
50. I'll go visit family who live in Minnesota and somewhere around Christmas time when it's, you know, snowing and, you know, -5 or whatever. That's a different kind of cold. And you're right. I wouldn't be standing outside my guitar. I guarantee you. No, not going to do it.
Well, we're expecting down here, Ventura County, LA County is expecting a very serious, probably our second of the season, very serious Santa Ana condition starting tomorrow night. And it's red flag warning time. It's dry as a bone out here. So I expect we're going to see some catastrophes brewing any moment now. And that's something I was talking to Keith about in an earlier episode. Well, you guys don't really get that too much up there, right?
We get wind.
Yeah, we get that. I mean,
I think anybody in a valley tends to get winds of some type, and we definitely get them. I'm talking about the cold and everything like that, but I got to be honest, playing in a really windy day is miserable.
Yeah. Been there, done that.
You lose your voice. Things are blowing over. It's, heavy wind really sucks when you're trying to perform
live.
That's
terrible.
I've done it a few times out in Santa Maria again. Really, really windy, and it's like, can we please go outside?
Going back to the kids band, the Birdie thing, we've played the Santa Maria Discovery Museum Kite Festival for the last 10 years every year, and there was, and it's always a beautiful day. I mean, little breezy because, you know, it's Kite Festival. They want some wind, right? But there was one year when it was exactly what you're describing. It was just like Arctic wind blowing, and you're up there on stage just, it was just miserable. I'll never forget that, man.
Yeah. It's hard to play in that. And I've done it a few times and I'm like, I'm going to make this work. And you can barely hear me because the wind's like,
blowing over the mic.
Not a thick enough windscreen on the mic.
Things are, even with the windscreen, it's not working, you know, because it's so windy and it's like, but I've done it. Yeah, we've done pickup parties for a couple of wineries. And I remember one time it was raining, and that was one of our best gigs ever. It blew me away how many people came outside and they were indoors and we were playing out. How many people came out in the rain to watch
us
play
in the rain?
At night? We were in the rain. And we had a tarp, a cover, but I was worried about our equipment because, I was really worried about our stuff. But all of a sudden you're thinking, and we're playing. And I remember just like, no one's going to come out here. Everybody's in. I think they can sort of hear us because we had our speakers pointed to the building. They're all hanging out. Next thing you know, 20, 30 people just kind of come out and they're just like rocking and dancing in the rain. It was like the most amazing experience I've ever had. I'm like, oh my God, this is really cool. End up being one of the best shows I remember. It's going to be one of those things I'm always going to remember is the, you know, my concert in the rain kind of thing.
It's a purple rain.
Yeah. And of course, you know, luckily my speakers didn't blow out.
Yeah.
But, not so much that is heat, too much heat. And your speakers just do not like, I got powered speakers and they do not like direct sunlight at all. And that has happened to me too. Anyway.
Gary, last question from a wine perspective. As we touched on Burgundy, you have about 50 acres under grapes. That's similar to a Burgundian winemaker, right? They don't have 400 acre farms.
We have 30 acres, but regardless.
30, I'm sorry,
No, you're right. In fact, a lot of these very famous vineyards are even much smaller than that. They might be. And the other thing is that, you know, like you'll have vineyards that have over the years been divided up amongst family or whoever owns them. And now like maybe five wineries are farming this, you know, 10 acre plot. Right. And so guys literally have like, I have rows, you know, 7 through 22 and those are the rows I have and they farm them. And you'll see that when I was in Burgundy, I would see just like, a husband and wife out there, you know, manicuring the vineyard. Yep. And yeah, it's remarkable. So truly Burgundy there. I mean, there's big time operations in Burgundy, but there's also little teeny tiny family operations that are making, you know, a few thousand bottles a year. And it's just, you know, it's for the passion and keeping it going, because maybe it's, you know, 25 generations in the family kind of thing, you know?
That's it. It's crazy. Yeah, it's great wine. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of that.
Say that again, Keith.
There's a lot of the little small little.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially when you get to these little teeny towns and like they've got a tasting room and you can go in there and it's like, you know, oh, I want to do a tasting. They go, oh, well, we have to call so-and-so to come down to, you know, like he's got to leave the business across town, you know, like right. Three streets over and come and open his doors and give you a tasting. It's really wild.
That's awesome.
And they said sometimes they'll put the label on right there on the spot, and they're, you know, they're going into their cave and grabbing some stuff and bringing it out. And well, I've always wanted to. That just sounds like a blast.
See, that's it. We need to go to Burgundy, Keith. That's got to be a post-COVID thing.
Gary
can take us. There you go. A road trip. It's a little long drive, but you know, when I was still heady and writing about wine in 2000, I think it was eight. I got an invitation to a French winemakers consortium that was coming into Oakland in the convention center. And so I took my pal Brian with me. Brian and I made wine together, and I took him as my photographer, which he most definitely wasn't, but it's too late now to get in trouble for that. and Brian and I got up there and we flew up on a Southwest early morning flight, grabbed a cup of coffee, took a cab over to the convention center. It opened up at 10. We walked in, and every row of tables was all these small French wineries, a lot of Burgundy places, a lot of stuff from Provence, some great Rhones. And I'll never forget going to the row of Burgundies. There were probably about 10 different Burgundian wines, and they sized you up, man. They wanted to know what kind of press you were and whether or not you were going to write about them, because they had no interest in serving you their wine if they weren't going to get anything out of this. And I thought, you know what, though, but that's business, right? They're not in the business of pouring free wine and giving it away.
That's very French. That is.
Yeah. Yeah. Sounds about right.
That's cool.
Well, it's been a treat to have you on, man. We've blown away an hour already.
Look at that. Cool.
We didn't get too, I guess we're kind of goofy. I'm not sure. But,
a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. I just want to thank you, Gary, of course, not only for your amazing wine, but also always having local live music. It's guys like you that just keep the live thing, you know, going, even in
Thank
these
you.
Dark
I,
times.
I appreciate that. Really it's right very now. Important to us. And yeah, we want to, you know, keep it going as long as we can.
Yeah, and as a musician, I appreciate it, because you are, you know, keeping it alive, and it's tough out there right now, like I said, and you know, so many people are, you know, getting turned in, and it's just a horrible time.
Well,
it's a horrible
we have a light at the end of the tunnel, musician. So we just got to get to the finish line.
Indeed, we do.
Yeah, that's true. We'll get back to normal real soon. Yeah. I can't wait. So, but thank you so much, Gary, for hanging out with
My
us.
My pleasure. Thank
tonight.
You, guys.
Yeah, had a
it's
great
a real
time.
Pleasure. Yeah, always great to have.
And if you want to check out, it's Costa d'Oro. I believe you've got a website. It's Costa d'Oro.
Costa de Oro Wines.com.
De Oro Wines.com. Okay.
It's de Oro.
No,
so
there is.
No
there
e.
is. So
it's
Costa de Oro. Costa de Oro.
Got it.
Yeah.
Costa de Oro.
Wines,
people. I'm coming up to buy some, Keith, when I come up for the weekend. We'll go over there, to Costa
d'Oro. I've got some Paisley Brothers right now. So
Nice.
So good stuff. Absolutely.
Thanks for hanging out, everybody. Welcome back next week for Considering Some Things, episode 40, whatever it is now, on our run up to episode 50, where we'll have a big celebration and cake.
Maybe we'll have some Costa d'Oro wine.
We'll have some Costa d'Oro wine and some cake.
We'll have to hit up Gary. Gary's like, I've left.
Have a great night, and thanks for joining us, everybody.
Take care, everybody. Thank you.